I see two big problems, two different and big problems. One is the owner's understanding the importance of the therapeutic food and what is the therapeutic food doing to the patient. And the second big problem is practitioners really understanding what is the food doing to their patients.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Blending passion for customer success with love for pet nutrition, Trow Nutrition. Kemen Pet Food and Rendering is dedicated to supporting longer, fuller pet lives. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rengen Pet Nutrition, we partner with a purpose.
Hello and welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I am Jan Sogodolski, and I'm dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the pet food science industry. So get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episodes. And today is my big honor to welcome Dr. Yon Relunu from Israel. Hello, Ron.
Hello, Jan.
It's my great pleasure to visit. So, Dr., can I say Yon?
Yes, it's okay.
Okay, perfect. So Yon is a veterinarian in Israel, and has a strong interest in nutrition. And today we're going to find, I think, a very interesting episode about what are the challenges that really faces to establish nutrition programs, especially clinical nutrition, in some countries, right? So, Yon, you are the first veterinarian, I believe, that kind of has a strong interest in clinical nutrition.
Yes, I can say something like that. We don't have any board-certified nutritionists here in Israel. And it is a very big challenge since we know how important is the clinical nutrition for mainly for all the internal medicine practice. And actually, there is one board certified in internal medicine that she tries to use clinical nutrition, but is not her main practice, is not her field of certifications. She's an internist. And I spoke to her several times, and she really wants and needs someone that is board certified in nutrition. And actually, it's kind of curious. I studied in Brazil. I'm a graduate from Brazil, and I moved to Israel almost 9 years ago. And I was doing a post degree course on clinical behavior. And one of the lectures was on the importance of the nutrition to the wellness of dogs and cats. And I understand that behavior and nutrition, they are basic for all pets, for all animals. So maybe I need to study a bit more of nutrition also besides of behavior. And I started to study more and more. And in certain time I said, okay, behavior is very interesting and I really like it, but maybe nutrition is more interesting because, you know, I eat every day and I discovered that I have some kind of IBS and some level of IBS, and I started to understand how it's important to improve my nutrition and what I'm eating. Okay, why I can't eat a lot of peas, for example? What will cause to me is that I need to avoid peas, or why the apple is better than the pear or bananas or papaya. And I started to research for more information. What, why, how? And I said, okay, maybe I can improve my patients also with this information. And I start to search how to be a board certified nutrition and understand that no one in Israel, I already knew that no one in Israel is board certified in nutrition. I know that there are two Israeli who are board certified in nutrition, but they are not in Israel. One is in USA and the other one is in Canada, and they're more academic and research, so they can't really practice in here also because of the distance. And I start to contact some board certified from the ACVIM, and I understand that the only option for me through the ICVIM is to move to USA for some years. It is hard with the family, and so it cannot be a possibility. They have an alternative track, but the requirements are very strict, and it can be very hard to approve the program. And then I found the ECVCN,
the European Society,
the European College and Society, and I found that their alternative program is more flexible and maybe easier to be accepted. It's not easy at all, but easier than the ACVIM for sure. And I made contact with some of their diplomates. I went to their residence class 2 years ago and last year. I was in the Congress last year and this year. And this year I present one abstract that is what are the challenges and how clinical nutrition, how veterinary nutrition is emerging in here. It's hard to say what are the biggest challenges because there are several. I'm sure that the main challenge is that since I'm not board certified, since I don't have any official certification, it reduces my authority voice in front of colleagues. They know that I'm not board certified. There are some that they understand I'm studying and I'm trying to reach the certification, but I'm not there yet. And the second part of the same challenge is that people who may give some nutritional services, they are not veterinarians. They are alternative therapists, holistic, all those names that people like to use, and they use titles like, no, I'm a dog nutritionist, I'm a cat nutritionist, I'm a... The most strange name I saw is I'm a specialist in dog natural nutrition.
So how do you, at the moment, so because obviously your long-term goal is to do a residency, hopefully. At the meantime, what are your resources and what's available for a person like in private practice like you to really get a more deeper understanding of nutrition?
Yes. So the first step I made was to take the vet folio courses. There is a pediatrician coach certification and therapeutic nutrition coach certification. Those were the two first courses I took, and then that's the advantage that I'm from Brazil and I can study in Portuguese, so I'm doing several courses in Portuguese that they are available. One is also a post-degree course that I'm the middle, more or less. I have 1 year more to finish the course, and this is what is giving me, first of all, knowledge that it's very important, but also gives me a recognition that I can show people, I have this certification. I know it's not the residency, I'm not specialist yet, but I study something. And since the law in here does not recognize the nutrition as a specialty in veterinary, in the veterinary medicine. So this is also something I'm trying to work, that's to recognize the nutrition as a specialty in veterinary medicine. But this is a very bureaucratic process, and like everything, bureaucracy is amazing.
Yes, no, but it's very impressive that you tried this route, and I think your experience is also mirror in many countries, right? We always talk about how nutrition is important for veterinarians, but it's actually very difficult to get access to board certification, to more advanced training. So I think this is something, a real bottleneck that we have at the moment, and so on. Let me talk a little bit other challenges, or since you are from Israel and you wanted to tell us a little bit also regional differences. So how are, for example, regional differences or regional feeding practices, how do they differ in countries, especially like Israel?
So I believe that in several countries it can happen, and I can say how is in Brazil that some people don't have access to basic things like water, clean water, and everything. And those people believe and they treat their dogs and cats in a different way. And when I say different way, it's not that they don't treat them properly, is they don't know what is right, what is wrong. And here we have, of course, the country is much smaller, and so the size and the distance difference, the distance challenge is not the biggest problem. But we also have a lot of different cultures. Like, we have the Orthodox society, or the part of society, and a lot of them, they don't like dogs. They don't like cats. They won't have a dog or a cat in their home because of some religious laws. And I can understand, I'm a religious person, and in my neighborhood, we have a lot of dogs, a lot of cats. But we are from a different, it's like lines of religious peoples. There are the Orthodox, we are more like the nationalist religious, more, I don't really like this definition, but it's more like the,
yep, this, I understand.
This name. And we are also people who are in the academia, we have some neighbors that they are professor in the Weizmann Institute. That's one of the a very good science place. And we know, but also in the Orthodox sector of the society, some people, they are more modern, and they have a dog, they have a cat, but still they have some limitations. Like, some people won't accept at all to give their dog or their cat food that contain pork meat because of the law. Again, the law says that it's forbidden to have any kind of a benefit from pork meat.
Okay, that also affects animals too.
Yes, and also to animals. So this is a limiting factor, since if there is a dog or a cat with IBD, with some food sensitivity, and the only food that will meet the requirements contains pork meat, it's a problem for those people. Also, we have the Arabic people. The Arab people, they're Muslims or not Muslims. There is some of them are Christians. Also, Jewish Arabs we have. And it's also a different culture, because some of them, they come, or their families came from Lebanon, from Syria. And they mainly, maybe they are creating their dogs in the garden, in the backyard. They won't let the dog go into the house. And maybe they won't invest a lot of money. Maybe they think, okay, the dog, the cat, they can eat the rest of our food, it's okay. And they also don't consume pork food, pork meat. So we have those limitations. in the clinic I work, we have a lot of Russian people, Russian, all Russian, Ukraine, and all countries that were once from the Soviet Union. Some of them, they don't speak Hebrew at all. They are elderly people. And sometimes it's hard to explain to them.
Mm-hmm. So it's a language barrier.
Not just the language, also the culture, because we can have people from Moscow and from another city that is almost in the border with the Siberia. And they won't understand. Those people from Moscow, they will understand. Okay, no, there is the dog food. Maybe this is the best option. But people from small cities, they won't understand. Why I can't give bones? Why I can't just give what they want? What's the problem? Why onions not?
But are they open to it when you explain to them, or are they still, it's very difficult to convince?
No, a lot of them, they are open. A lot of them, they are open to listen, but not to do.
Okay.
Also because they are like 60, 70, 80 years old. They don't understand. One of the technicians at the clinic, her mother is 80-something, 87, I think. She doesn't understand why she can't just keep giving food to the dog. What is the problem? I loved my dog, so I'm giving her food to show that I love her. But they don't understand that it can be harmful.
How about specialized food? So we said like, you know, pork meat and so on, but what's the availability and acceptance of like therapeutic diets, like hydrolyzed diets and other diets? Are they available in Israel easy? And
yes, they are available. We have Purina, we have Hills, we have Royal Canin, Monj. Mm-hmm. I think those the four brands, the four big brands we have in here that you can remember. We have a lot of brands, a lot of food brands, and this is also a big challenge. But in terms of therapeutic diets, I believe that in general people, they do accept it, but there is also some kind of questioning why I can't give and other foods, why I can't give treats, what is the problem? But it also depends on the food, like if it's a gastrointestinal food, maybe giving additional food is not a very big problem. But when we are talking on sensitive diets or even urinary tract diets, the limitation is bigger, and sometimes people don't understand. Mainly because those foods, they are not very accepted by the patient.
So over the last few years, do you believe it's changing a little bit, or you can make a difference, or is it going to be a long way for changing the approach? Because I can understand it's challenging.
I see two different and big problems. One is the owner's understanding the importance of the therapeutic food, and what is the therapeutic food doing to the patient? And the second big problem is practitioners really understanding what is the food doing to their patients. So when they see some azotemia in the blood work, do they really need to already change to a renal diet? And does it need to be the most restricted protein diet? If yes, why? Or, okay, you are trying to diagnose atopic dermatitis or food sensitive. Why do you have to do it? And how you do it? Are you really doing? I like the last guidelines on dermatologic disease from 2 years ago, I believe, from AVMA. Or AAAJ, I never remember from where the guidelines are. And they explain, they have this conceptual map that you have, the challenge is at least 8 weeks, and it can last even 6 months. But I can't really say to a client, no, we are now trying something for 6 months. they won't accept it. And I can understand, because my dog, my cat is suffering from itching, suffering from diarrhea for, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 6 years sometimes. And now you are saying that I need 6 months of trial without knowing if it will really help. Sorry, but I won't do it.
So what are your strategies? Do you have any kind of tips how to overcome those challenges?
I really believe on education, and I think we need to, not just in here, worldwide, I think this is the right thing to do, is to make the material, make educational material more accessible to people. It's very kind. We have a positional statements, and but people are not reading today, so maybe we need to do TikTok videos for those for this kind of information, and we really need to introduce it to people's life. So what is diarrhea, and why do I give the gastrointestinal food or the chicken and rice? What is chicken and rice? Actually, chicken and rice, they are not the main, they are just the vehicle, they are just the way to give protein, high protein, low fat, and high fiber diet. And this is very different to say the ingredients, or like people here like to say, and in Brazil also, that this is easy for digestion. Why? What is easy for digestion? I don't think my stomach and my intestine are working more or less if I'm eating cheese or chicken. And this is the... But by the other hand, this is how people understand what they're doing. You understand that, okay, something on the digestion process is not good, so I'm giving a food or some ingredients that they will alleviate what the digestion process is having trouble.
So that means it's really starting at the basics, that's the education needed. Because yes. You mentioned Brazil. I know that in Brazil, almost every veterinarian is on Instagram and has little videos for all the clients. So that's definitely a good idea.
Yes.
What about supplements? So when you think about companies, right, if there's a market that is still very at the beginning, what do you think acceptance for supplements, for other treats, how are they accepted in Israel?
Supplements, people like to give supplements. They don't really know what supplements do, but they like.
Okay. Why do you think is that?
I think this is some marketing thing also for people that, take the vitamins. You need those vitamins. Why I need? No, but you need it. I do believe that a lot of people need vitamins, because also we as people, as world population, we don't really have a good diet. But it's also easier to give supplements than to change the whole diet. So we have some lines of supplements, some companies that they are well established in here and they have a good name. But I don't think that people really know what they are doing, both practitioners and owners. And I see a lot of questions on Facebook groups, and my dog is 7 years old. What vitamins or supplements I can give to her, to the hip or to the joints? And I say, no one. If there is no problem, if the dog is healthy and there are no joint problems, there are not any orthopedic problems, you can give something. It won't help. It won't avoid. But if when your Labrador, your German Shepherd was 6 months old, you could suppose you could delay the castration, maybe you won't need, you don't need now to give something to the joints. Or if on the early age, on maybe young adult, you already start with more omega-3 and the correct ratio of omega-3 and 6, now you don't need nothing because you made all the process. People also like the fast and easy solutions. So they believe, oh, okay, I'll give some tabs and my dog won't have any pains. No, it won't work like that. It's a continual process for the whole life.
No, it's very fascinating. It's very insightful to see all the challenges you have in different countries, right? So we're almost at the end of our episodes. So let me ask you, maybe, do you have any vision? What would be the short-term goal? Maybe you can summarize in 1 or 2 minutes. What do you think would be the easy low-hanging fruits that companies maybe could help? Or so education is probably one important part, but where do you see something that could be more easily addressed?
I think we have here some companies that they sell what here we call natural food. I know in USA, the definitions, the names are kind of different. I think the best fit name is human-grade food, although it's written not suitable for human consumption. But okay, but this is like the natural ingredients with less process.
Okay, like fresh food, kind of like
yeah,
okay.
Fresh food. None of them has the status of a complete and balanced food. Or and the other problem is a. We don't have access to the whole list of nutrients. My dog does receive one of those foods, but I give supplement.
Owners,
I know more or less how to calculate it.
Yeah, but owners like this kind of food. That's kind of a you think.
A lot of owners do like, and the challenge is to reach the companies and to receive more information, so I can explain and I can orient people how to properly give those food with the correct supplementation. And a lot of people believe that this is the best option for their pets. And I don't think we can disagree or disagree with this. It's a very big discussion. I think the easier way to reach the both practitioners and owners is to really gain some authority voice to say, okay, I know what I'm doing, and I'm really trying someone in the ECVCN to be my supervisor for the residency or something I can do locally, and really to expand the educational process to make more material accessible, because all material is in English. So I'm also translating some material to Hebrew. I'm trying to find someone to translate into Arabic also, because we have an important percentage of the population that they are Arabic speakers, and I believe that it's very important to reach them too.
No, that's wonderful. That's very insightful. I think it's really opens eyes how challenging it is in some countries to really induce nutrition to the clients and also veterinarians.
It's time for our famous three.
For more than 20 years, Bioregen manufactures high-quality yeast-based ingredients through a sustainable biotechnological process, guaranteeing full traceability from the crop to the bowl. Through specialization in the fermentation process, Bioregen brings the right solution for specific nutritional, palatability, and health appeals, such as gut health, immune system, skin health, weight control, and more. Bioregen's products are natural origin, non-GMO, and certified sustainable by Bonsucro. Bioregen is your partner for high-quality, yeast-based ingredients to add value to pet foods worldwide. Learn more at bioregen.net.
So let me ask you, because we're on the end of episodes, usually we like to ask a little bit of a completely different question. Outside veterinary medicine, what is a book that you really like that you would recommend?
I read it not a long time ago. It's The Forever Dog from Karen Becker and okay, I forgot his name.
It's okay. Well, why do you like
it? I like this book because it's a book with from all sides. It's a book from the side of the Rodney Habib. He's an owner. He's not someone from the veterinary field, not from the academia field at all. And he brings his side as an owner that saw his dog suffering from something that nutrition could help. And Dr. Karen Becker, she has some sight from someone that made research. She was involved in some research. As I know now, she's just on the practice. She's not in research anymore. But she also has the sight from the clinician. Of course, I think that it cannot be the first book you read on nutrition. I think you have to read some books before to understand more basic things. And to read, I believe, all books must be read with some critical eyes, some critical thought. But The Forever Dog is really some book that brings a lot of information. You can take it. This is the true, that they, as we say in Hebrew, it's not the Bible Moses received from God, but it has a lot of important information. And also the last part of the book, they bring some orientation. And this is what people want. Orientation. This is what people look for, orientation. And I really believe that someone can enrich their knowledge reading this book.
Great, wonderful. So thank you so much, Dr. Jon Rillenu. I really hope that one day you're going to join us again, maybe as a nutritionist, a board certificate in the future.
Yes,
So that's very insightful. So I really enjoyed this episode. So with this concludes another episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very valuable to us. Until next time, this is Jan Sugodolski signing off.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.